This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Wednesday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall, Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jens Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio, getting ready to be on the road again. I know you're fired up to get out there. College baseball, talk a lot about that later on in the program here. Kyle Peterson's going to join the show here. Adam Burke, our managing editor, talk some more Major League Baseball. And our conversations Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds, talking some golf at the Charles Schwab this weekend as well. But Jensen, you are getting ready to go to Morgantown this weekend for the people that missed the show yesterday. Mom wants you to know that, again, I told you, it's a lot of family area. And she had to go to Morgantown back in the 50s. For choir. She was sent there for the choir. So I don't think you're going for the same reasons Mom went many moons ago.
We're going to make it sing, though, Mama Ross. It's going to be a lot of fun starting on Friday afternoon. We're excited. We're staying pretty close to campus, downtown Morgantown there. So excited to get there. Nice little 3-hour drive door to door here. So always nice. When you can get back out on the road, we'll have VSiN on Sirius Channel 158 to take me all the way there this afternoon. So a lot to get into. Very, very excited. Kyle Peterson, best in the business, senior analyst there for ESPN. He's going to be in Lincoln. Buddy, we talked about just crazy atmospheres. That one, wait till you hear his explanation, because he's an Omaha native. Not a long drive for him either going up to that, but that might be the most competitive regional all weekend long.
Yeah, you still learn things about your loved ones you didn't know. Mom, it was all state chorus senior year 1956 in Morgantown. Mom, of course I knew you're all state. Of course, I know you've got a voice of an angel. We saw a wild one last night here. OKC, a lot of points being scored in this one. Let's get to it with our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
It was an interesting game five, Jensen. It felt like early on San Antonio kind of punched first, OKC punched back, and never really were headed much in the second half. Some runs that the Spurs tried to make at them, but never really where you got to the point where you felt like they were in jeopardy of losing this game five. So it goes way over the total. The OKC Thunder close and cover all the numbers. Remember, this thing came down 3.5 is where it closed here. So money did come in on San Antonio, but they end up losing by 13. And again, SGA has 32. So if you didn't watch the game, you just look at the numbers, you go, oh, pretty good day. Not really, Jensen. Most of that work was done at the free throw line here. So it was a weird feel to it. What did you make of it now with OKC back in command up 3-2?
Well, what a response, right? The defensive clamps put down on this Thunder offense in a rousing game 4 victory for the Spurs. Remember, it was 82 total points that OKC scored in game 4. How about 82 points on Tuesday before the third quarter was just about 4 minutes in? That gives you not only a get up off the mat feel, Dave, but a come out swinging and landing some big punches. You talked about SGA, 7 of 19 from the field, but 16 of 17 from the line. Right. My goodness, it's always crazy to look at the merchant there from the charity stripe. To see what he had. But hey, 11-point lead at halftime, Dave. And you could kind of tell towards the end of the first quarter, the Thunder really meant some business here. And they, I think, were a bit embarrassed about what happened in game 4. Mark of a champion, right? How resilient are you? Well, we're going to find out that too about the San Antonio Spurs. Victor Wembanyama not talking after the game. You could see at the end there a little chippiness from some of the Spurs substitutes there. A little more drama headed back to Texas here for game 6 tomorrow night.
I think what also shows me, if you, again, going back to game 4, Alex Caruso had 0 points in that loss, right? And then all of a sudden you look at this one with a game that goes well over the total where they score 127 points and he has 22 off the bench. So it's not as simple as that when you win by 13, but you do need to get those bench contributions here, and they did get them certainly from Alex Caruso last night. And Jared McClain was really good in the starter spot last night as well with 20 points here. So maybe some added offense that certainly you did not get in game 4. They certainly got it in game 5 back in command of this series. How about the Golden Knights? They sweep away the Avs last night here, Jensen, and we saw that if you had a ticket at Circa to get the sweep in 4, I'd like to see those tickets, Jensen, because I don't know that many people were playing that angle here, but if we do get the long shot home with VGK in four against the Avs, and now they await the winner of Carolina and Montreal.
Yeah, great friends at Circa posting that coming into the Western Conference Finals, VGK were almost 29-1 to sweep the Avs. Wow. That was the longest odds on the board for an exact series result. Our friend Evan Abrams over at the Action Network also chiming in saying VGK, the biggest series underdog at 2-1 to sweep a conference final or a final since the Devils did it back in 1995. Dave, how about since Vegas came into being a franchise? They're 4-1 as series underdogs and 19-9 in games in those series. So you got to go all the way back to the 2013 Chicago Blackhawks, who remain the last President's Trophy winner to win the Stanley Cup and even reach the finals. So the Colorado Avalanche swept away in more ways than one. What a stunning result here, especially from the odds market. But congratulations, Golden Knights. You will have the Stanley Cup final at T-Mobile coming up next week.
It's such a bizarre thing with the President's Trophy here to have the most points in the regular season. And I just moved to Chicago at the end of 2013, 2014. And, you know, that was like a narrative, like, oh, my goodness, like you just don't do that. You don't win the Stanley Cup after you win the President's Trophy. But here they are. They were able to do it over a decade ago. And Colorado cannot do it again this year. And again, MacKinnon did give it a go last night in game four, but 1-0 early. And that defense that we talked about, clamp down, take that 2-0 lead, then hold on for the 2-1 victory. A very John Tortorella type of victory here for VGK to get this done and sweep them away in four. And again, what a difference that managerial move made. I wish the Mets would think about doing something like that in baseball. Hurricanes can take a commanding 3-1 lead here in the Eastern Conference as they're going to be back on the road north of the border in the Bell Center tonight against Montreal. And we've talked about it a lot and kind of noted how it really hasn't been a whole big of a home ice advantage pretty much anywhere, but really certainly in this series here where we've been able to see multiple wins now. Montreal won game one in Carolina, and then we saw Carolina get the win in game three. So I don't know how much home ice really matters. Carolina is a small road favorite again tonight in game four.
Does feel like that's the side initially. And again, if you're taking anything out of what's happened, albeit two overtime victories back to back here for Carolina, more of the defensive prowess on display and really limiting the speed pressure that the Canadiens offense has really relied upon throughout this run in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Anxious to see it. We'll revisit it as we get moving in the show, Dave, but saw a fair amount of sharp money headed into that Carolina money line last night. I've not really seen too much different here this morning. Barring something unforeseen, I think we go right back to what has been profitable here the last two times out. It's an under. It's a very tightly contested game. And if you're looking for, you're going to have to probably pay some juice on it. But I mean, again, go right back to see another Carolina 3-2 win, whether it's in regulation or OT. I think Carolina has all the momentum right now heading tonight's game four.
You know, I kind of kid about making those changes. And depending on your sport, whether you can go back to Cowboy days with Jason Garrett and how many times you can bring back the clapper and do the same thing. And you see teams that, like, say, a Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, you want to make a change there, even a John Harbaugh in Baltimore. Well, the Cavaliers, rather, are going to run it back with Kenny Atkinson in Cleveland and James Harden reportedly. So we mentioned that right at the end of the show, Dan Gilbert, it sounded like maybe change would be coming, that he seemed more upset than maybe the head coach and one of the star players. But Jensen, I guess today in Cleveland, they're going to try to run this back and see if they can get this Rubik's Cube and figure it out.
Well, this isn't really the big story. The big story is the big swings that Coby Altman and Dan Gilbert are looking to take here. A lot of buzz around acquiring Giannis Antetokounmpo. I talked about it a little bit yesterday. That is priority one. Outside of that, once they do, according to Brian Windhorst, sign James Harden back, it sounds like a much more team-friendly multiple-year deal so they can get under the second apron for the financials there. Within that team payroll, and then trying to bring back the old crusty veteran in LeBron James to be one of those sideshow clowns that will fill out this starting five. So we'll see how it works out. Drama continues, but another embarrassing offseason to start here for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
the definition of insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over again and get a different result. So we'll see if that works this time around with Kenny Atkinson and with James Harden. Interesting, Derwin James becomes the highest paid safety in the history of the NFL. And look, when this guy is healthy, he's a real difference maker. But Jensen, that's been the bugaboo here, not just with Derwin James, but the Chargers in general, if you can get this team at full strength. But it shows you what Jim Harbaugh thinks about his big talented safety out of Florida State there. And how about this? The NCAA denies Brendan Sorsby's request for eligibility this year. So it looks like they're taking a hardline stance there with the gambling. We know he did go to rehab and those things, but those are two of the bigger stories here in the NFL and college football this morning.
Yeah, could not even, in the Texas Tech side with Sorsby, could not even get the hometown judge, a Texas Tech alum, to look the other way. I told you this at the beginning, Dave. At this point, you have to make an example. I don't care how small, how peanuts, whatever. Pete Rose, still not in the Hall of Fame, you know, because of betting on baseball, betting on his own team. Well, what do you think is going to happen here in our day and age? By the way, throwing it out to you, shout out Danny Higgins, huge Ravens fan. Derwin James eclipsing by just $100,000 average annual salary over Kyle Hamilton for year over year to be the highest paid safety. But again, you understand how those guys are difference makers. What a great job there by the Chargers to bolster what is looking like yet again another very stout unit headed into 2026.
Yeah, I mean, those are two of the best safeties in the league, and you have one of those guys on your team, you got a chance when they're healthy, but that's, I think, why Cowboy backers are so excited about Caleb Downs this year, so maybe they're going to get a difference maker at that position, a very key one here with guys like Derwin James and Kyle Hamilton. Okay, much more to get to, including what's going to happen here in the NBA. Now, we know what's happening in the East. In the West, is it more clear after last night with OKC or value on San Antonio? We'll discuss next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Wednesday morning. It is Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here coming at you. We were watching OKC last night dispose of San Antonio, 127-114, and really never felt too threatened. There were a couple times San Antonio made pushes inside of 10. You thought maybe get a little bit interesting here in the third quarter. And I guess now, again, after that game four victory, I think if you're a Spurs backer, you're pretty emboldened by what you saw. Maybe this is one of those true series where home court really does matter, right? We're talking about home ice a lot in the NHL, how it really hasn't mattered that much. This feels like in the NBA, at least at this stage, where it really is mattering. Certainly matters for the Knicks, as they've already gotten through after sweeping away the Cavs. And now here's San Antonio, after losing game one in just heartbreaking fashion for their side, exhilarating fashion with Wemby and the pull-up three and all those things in game one. We've been waiting for that kind of game one feel, I guess, Jensen, here, but we really didn't get it in game four. Pretty easy for San Antonio and pretty easy for OKC last night. As this series now shifts back to San Ann, do you think that momentum follows San Antonio back home on their home court?
Boy, I think adjustments have been great, and credit to the head coaches here. Mark Dagnall did a really great job of yet again frustrating and contesting Victor Wembanyama. I think the physicality now, Dave, of this series and the leverage and the exposure on Wemby, it's starting to show a little bit here. And what I mean by that, he's 4 of 15 from the field. Okay, there has been a concerted effort to really get in his face, to really kind of create some issues and make it arduous for him to get some easy buckets. I think it's playing out. Now, he did have 12 free throws, and that kind of lends me more towards that. All right, if you're going to earn it, you know, then we're going to we're going to kind of, you know, get in your grill and make you feel it before you get to the line. 0-5 from distance last night beyond the arc. So credit OKC for doing that. I think if you watch this series, Dave, Mitch Johnson has basically said, we're going to do everything possible to try and make sure SGA does not beat us. Last night's really that first time where you saw him get out in earnest and really impose his will. Again, not the greatest shooting night, 7-19.
No.
But when you go 16 of 17 from the charity stripe, it makes that point total look even better. It's the supporting cast. And a thought that we had yesterday, right? If San Antonio were to win game five, you would need similar contributions from what you did in game four from, you know, Stephon Castle, from the De'Aaron Fox. You got it from Stephon Castle. Hell, you got it from Julian Champagne, 4 of 8 from distance in his own right. It's just, I think you're starting to see the wear and tear on Wemby here. It really is starting to illuminate it. And I think the Thunder now have kind of, you know, tipped the scale back and put all that pressure back on the Spurs to try and hold serve.
That's what I said right after game one, after the win by San Antonio with the Wemby pull-up three. And Jensen, I'm sure you remember, I came on here and said, boy, if you let him shoot from three, that's what you have to do. Like, that's a win for OKC. Whether or not you win the game or that individual battle, that's where you want Wemby to operate. And when he goes 0-5 from three-point land last night, you know, some of those, one of those I think was right at the end of the first quarter, he's kind of throwing it up there late in the shot clock. But really, they're saying, go ahead, big fella. And I think that's a great strategy by Mark Daigneault. You just say, go ahead. If you beat us and you make 4 of 6 threes and you want to be a 7-4 Steph Curry, go right ahead. Then go do that and we'll live with that because we can't handle you down low. So you're right. You saw like those push shots that you're seeing here. Even Holmgren got a little bit more than Hartenstein did last night too, where they're actually operating down low now against Wemby a little bit. So that has been a slight change. I'll tell you this, because I had a prop last night on SGA over 30.5. So I was watching that like a hawk. He had 30 going into the fourth quarter. And Jensen, he deferred a lot in the fourth quarter. And a matter of fact, it was a late layup to actually get that point total and cash that ticket at 32. I was getting a little bit nervy because what I noticed is with that kind of working margin they had, he was definitely trying to get those other guys involved. And like McCain was one of those guys that you really saw take advantage of maybe SGA deferring a little bit because they were doubling him a lot. So I wonder, he did not have a great shooting night and yet he still scores 32. When you go back to San Antonio, a better shooting night, I think that they're going to have designs on trying to get this thing out of there in six, and I'll be interested to see where the money comes in here in the next day and a half.
I think Zach Cohen, if you got Bill AD's email this morning as a VSiN Pro subscriber, I think Zach summed it up perfectly. If the Thunder make their threes, it's curtains for the series. It just feels like that has been the difference maker because you have a lot of those other sides that have offset each other. Between Wemby and SGA, supporting cast at both sides. And reminder, hey, this is still a team without Jalen Williams on OKC side. So it just kind of gives you an idea of where the star power has really been good. Speaking of supporting cast, you brought up Alex Caruso. What was it? 20 points, 6 assists last night. Isaiah Hartenstein with the double-double, 12 points, 15 rebounds. And then Jared McCain, who actually got the start last night, scored 18 of his 20 points in the second half as the Thunder pulled away from the Spurs. I guess for me, Dave, you know, if you're looking back and what did we learn from game four where the Spurs were excellent and then, you know, kind of fell on their face in game five? And conversely, what did we learn? Thunder, not their best showing by a long stretch in game four, but boy, they get off the mat in game five. If you had to handicap it now, do you think going back to the Lions den, the Thunder have now figured it out and have worn Wemby down enough that if they have a first quarter like they did last night, tomorrow night, is this thing over in San Antonio?
I think they feel like they can't lose at home. There's a danger in that, obviously. Game seven, anything can happen. We know that. So I just wonder if they have a terrible first half like they had in game four. Remember, SGA didn't play in the fourth quarter of that game four. I just wonder if they get down, do they go, all right, let's just do the same thing, kind of mail in the second half and get back on our home court in a game seven. That'd be my only concern there. But I do feel like with McCain shooting the way he did yesterday, getting the 22 from Caruso off the bench yesterday, and remember, he did not score in game four. So those are massive differences. It's essentially 42 more points, if you will, roughly, out of those two guys that you didn't get in a game four. So can you count on that again? Probably not to that degree. But you saw Dagnall really change up guys coming off the bench and even in the starting lineup with McCain, and maybe lessened a little bit. The Andrew Wiggins only played a minute. Isaiah Joe only had 2 minutes yesterday. So without two guys that are key to this team, obviously, he even shortened up the bench even more, which was interesting. He didn't elongate it. He went the other way and said, I'm going to go with the certain guys, maybe, you know, a core nine that I really trust, 8-9, and that's going to be about it. So I think, Jensen, if they're in it in the first half, you make the push. But if Wemby comes out and exerts himself like he did in game four, really emphatically early, kind of took the fight out of OKC, I'll be looking at that. And then you saw like OKC kind of wave that white flag. We saw Cleveland wave the white flag. Boy, did they wave it early and often in this series after game one didn't go their way. Well, according to Shams Charania over there at ESPN, I love Shams, he does a great job. He talked about Kenny Atkinson and said that, well, guess what, people? You might think that he's going. He's not going anywhere. Take a listen.
Malika, sources tell me that Kenny Atkinson will return as head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers for his third season. His job is safe. Over his first 2 years as coach of the Cavaliers, he's had a franchise best win percentage of over 70%. The end was ugly, though. It was a sweep, or to the Knicks, I should say. But year over year growth for the Cavs, second round last season, coach of the year for Kenny Atkinson, the conference finals this year, and he's got the support of Donovan Mitchell and James Harden. And this is the first conference finals for the Cavaliers without a LeBron James led team in 34 years. So there's a lot for the Cavaliers to deconstruct now over the coming days and weeks. I expect the Cavaliers front office to be opportunistic with potential roster upgrades this offseason.
If you're watching on FanDuel Sports Network, the first picture we showed of Kenny Atkinson looked like he was doing the GIF. Absolute cinema with the hands up, because it was watching this guy and listening to this guy. It was more about what these guys were saying after the game, Jensen, what they were doing during the games here. You know, that game one, again, I get back to that. So look, Shams is kind of looking at it. Maybe Dan Gilbert is too, as it still was successful. I don't know that you and I see it the same way.
Yeah, agreed. I guess any actionable intelligence to me, and as I had said before, for people just joining us, if you're looking, once those futures are posted for next year, about Cavs to win the East, Cavs to win the finals, with the idea that they're going to try and go get Giannis, they're going to try and sign LeBron, it might be worth jumping on that, because that feels, everything from I've heard here in Northeast Ohio, that's the MO. Sick and tired of what's happened the last 2 years. And quite frankly, Dave, so am I. And so is the entire fan base. Let's actually get tough one time and be able to go toe-to-toe with some of the best in the East.
Yeah, that's really, I know we're going to focus a lot on Mitchell and Harden. I was a little bit disappointed in the front court a little bit that some of those big guys like the Mobleys of the world, Jared Allens of the world, weren't more physical down there. Toughness, I think you're right, Jensen. They need a little bit of that toughness, maybe that mean streak. We'll see if Giannis is the right guy to fill it. You'd want one of the best players in the world on your team, that's for sure. Hockey, let's talk about the passion of the puck here. When we come back, the Golden Knights are through. Who will they play in the Stanley Cup final? We'll discuss next right here. Be smart.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. You wake up, have your coffee, have a little Dunkin' Donuts this morning. Check out VSiN.com. They've got everything you need to bet smarter. Right now, when you go to VSiN.com, Greg Peterson has got his Major League Baseball best bets up there for you. Wes Reynolds is going to be on the program a little bit later for our Wednesdays with Wes. His Charles Schwab Challenge preview. And Zach Cohen's got his French Open tennis picks up there right now. So you go about your day, you come back a little bit later on, go back to VSiN.com. And JD, Jonathan Davis, is going to have his Carolina Montreal Game 4 picks tonight. Cracker Barrel 400 simulation will be up. And Steve Mackinnon has his Major League Baseball analytics report. Right now, how about this offer? 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 when you use the promo code PRO. That's P-R-O. So head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Do so today. Again, that is a limited time offer, people. It will end It really is the best bang for your buck, under 50 cents a day. Jets are going back north of the border to the Bell Center. We've talked about it a little bit here with Jonathan Davis and the like. It does feel like it's a great atmosphere. It might be the best atmosphere in all of the NHL, but it hasn't exactly been very difficult for opposing teams to go in there and win, whether that's Tampa Bay, whether that's Buffalo, and now Carolina is 1-0 north of the border here in the Bell Center. I don't know if that's pressure of not winning a cup since 1993, if you're the Canadiens and you're the last team in your country to win Ward Stanley's Cup, but I'm sure there is some of that built-in pressure there, Jensen, for Montreal to get the job done. What about tonight's game? Carolina is a small favorite. Feels like Anderson's got his legs back there, and the defense in front of him has been pretty darn good. It feels like a recipe maybe for Carolina again. It's $1.40 in the money line, and that total sitting right there at 5.5 once again.
Yep, and again, that is, to me, with where Game 2 and Game 3 have transpired, David, has felt very one-sided here. And what I mean by that, if you look at statistics, Carolina has dominated the shot attempts. We talked a lot in the VGK series leading up to the sweep last night about high danger chances. That's all you saw, basically, from the Hurricanes in Games 2 and 3. Montreal was very much on their heels. Their puck management has to be better. The Canadiens, in that regard, they have really been stymied in their own zone. So again, it feels like the puck has been on their side of the rink for the majority of these last two games. And that's a credit to where Rob Brind'Amour and company have really forced the issue. Again, this goes back to if Montreal can get better, results on their power play. And that's asking a lot considering how elite the penalty kill has been for Carolina. Then you've got opportunities, but you have got to get momentum on your side quite quickly here. We know the Bell Center obviously will be jumping, but Dave, to me, you're not winning hockey games at this point in the Stanley Cup playoffs if you're generating just 11, 13, 15 shots on Frederik Andersen. I mean, he can kind of, stand up and drink from the water bottle the way it's been going these last couple of nights.
Now, on the puck line here, if you like the Carolina side, you do get solid plus money, plus $1.90, by the way. So, again, look at that. You're laying $1.42 in the money line here, but you can get almost 2-1 if they can win by two or more. The problem there, Jensen, this isn't the style of hockey they normally play, right? It's normally not that wide-open brand to potentially get that. Now, if you have the lead, obviously, late in the third, you're going to get that empty netter situation. That's where you could get that. Is that the only way to play that? Is if you really think they have the lead in regulation, unlike normally they've been going to overtime a lot, getting these W's. They've done the last two games, ironically, to play that on the puck line. Do you think there's a chance that we finally see maybe an old-fashioned, I don't want to say a shutout, but you get that low-scoring affair, you can get like a 3-1 type tally if you can get the goaltender pulled late?
Yeah, God, I personally would, if you're going to the puck line, I would have to play an alternate minus one. I would want the coverage of a push. And again, just kind of knowing what we've seen, and let's have recency bias here. The last couple of times out, lower scoring, tightly contested, unders have been your friend. Even if you want to get a little bit more breathing room by playing an alternate under six, I could see that playing out here, Dave, and that still gives you a little room for error. I just can't get away from what I've seen from Carolina, and maybe now we're seeing a little bit of that extended rest benefit them. Okay, we talked a lot about the fade in game one because of all the time off. Great. Well, now we're back in rhythm if you're Carolina. And remember, Montreal has played some drawn-out series. They have played some highly emotional ends of series thus far. And are we getting very much in the same way we handicap what Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs are going through? Are we starting to see the fatigue factor be a part of the story and the narrative with Montreal? Young team, still trying to figure out how to win at this point, but you're seeing the veteran nature, and I think the defense has been so paramount for Carolina throughout this postseason run, let alone what we've seen in the last couple of games.
This is interesting because obviously Carolina has gone to odds-on favorites to hoist Lord Stanley's Cup at minus $1.10, okay? But what is interesting here is there are some exactas that are already up at DraftKings this morning. Carolina to beat VGK, who is obviously through after sweeping away the Avs last night, is minus $1.15. So I find that interesting. It's minus $1.10 right now, But again, you, Carolina, you have to come by Montreal, obviously, to have the opportunity to play VGK. But it would be a minus $1.15 price right now if that is the exacta. By the way, the other exactas out there, VGK, to beat Carolina, they're plus 205. To beat Montreal is plus 650. And Montreal to beat VGK is plus $9. And ironically, Montreal right now, just to win the cup against either opponent, is plus 925 as the longest shot out there. When you see that price point of Carolina to beat VGK minus $1.15, is it really worth it to play them right now at minus $1.10 to win the cup? Because again, you guys still win two more games against Montreal.
Yeah, interesting, right? And kind of where you are on the exacta, I would much rather kind of wait and go gain. The price is short enough that, you know, to each their own on that point. The Vegas sweep, though, and we're going to get another instance, Dave, especially if Montreal finds a way to equalize the series tonight. You get another additional rest factor here, and I'm sure Vegas is fine with it. They'll end up taking it and enjoying a few extra days off. Imagine if this thing does go the distance, and you know, now it's on the flip side here where Carolina had all the time off. Let's say they get through, but you got to go seven. What will that look like? So I'd much rather hold off and see where we are after tonight. And if Carolina does take the 3-1 series lead, then maybe we revisit that tomorrow.
Yeah, because if you're on the VGK side now that they are through, they're plus $1.20 to win the cup. But as I just mentioned in the exactas, they would be basically a $2 betting underdog against Carolina. So if you like them, now look, if Montreal wins, obviously you're not going to get the best of the number because they're going to be favorites to beat Montreal. That's the risk of waiting and not grabbing that plus $1.20. But Jensen, if we really do believe it's going to be Carolina coming out of the East and you're a VGK backer, then you just have to wait because you will get a better number technically if it is Carolina against VGK in the Stanley Cup Finals. And again, right now we're seeing that at about $1.15 on the Carolina side. So that's interesting. If you want to play that waiting game here, if you're not convinced it's Carolina, then just hold your water there if you're a VGK fan. Montreal, to their end, to get this back to where we're talking about Montreal, still to win the Eastern Conference, then get to the finals. Jensen, they got to play more open ice, right? They got to get those opportunities against Anderson. As you mentioned, only 11 shots on goal in the last game. My question, I guess, is going to be how do they create that? Because nobody else has really been able to figure that out aside from game one where Montreal did get those chances early and often.
Yeah, I hate to say it. How do you generate more power plays? Because it feels the odd man advantage has really been the only time that Montreal has had an advantage through three games in this series. Listen, a 5-on-5, an even strength, Carolina will generate far more shots. That is kind of what we've seen thus far. But this is going to have to be not necessarily Jakub Dovish standing on his head, because I don't think you need to go that far. But it certainly feels that if Montreal gets multiple power play opportunities, that is their best chance through. A lot of skill, a lot of speed, but they've got to be opportunistic, I think, in my mind, to try and score tonight. Hey, there's not a lot you can ask much of you know, Dobish here outside of, you know, getting some 5-on-4, some 5-on-3s. Like, it's not one of those things that happen. Carolina is extremely disciplined. As I said, they've got arguably the best penalty kill in the NHL this year. So you're trying to climb Everest without an oxygen tank right now if you're Montreal looking to put the puck in the net.
Yeah, it's ironic because it does feel like that the equation here that maybe Carolina's Iceman from Top Gun, right? They just flies. That's just, he's going to fly that way. That's the way it's going to be. We're not taking those unnecessary chances. And you've got to figure out a way to make us uncomfortable. And they haven't been able to do that in the last two games here. And ironically, I think VGK has got a little bit of that in them too. They've got a little bit of that Carolina style now with John Tortorella. Mitch Marner, by the way, is the favorite to win the Conn Smythe now at plus $1.55. Frederick Anderson's the second betting choice at 5-1. So Jensen, that's the challenge for Montreal. Can you get Iceman to be a little bit more like Maverick and play a little bit more wild and undisciplined? Hard to do right now. And that's why Carolina is now taking a stranglehold back on this series and favored to win game four tonight north of the border. Okay, when we come back, let's talk a little bit of some Major League Baseball. And I'm going to hear from Stormy and Matt Brown. They've got a very interesting outlook on Shohei Ohtani, something we've talked a lot about, MVP and Cy Young. That's next right here. Beeson by the Books. We'll be right back.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Wednesday morning and have Kyle Pearson join us in the next hour, talk some college baseball. Jensen, I know you're getting ready to get on the road to Morgantown. Mom is excited for you. I said, yes, Mom, he will be in Morgantown tomorrow. So that's going to be a lot of fun having you there on site there. And we'll talk more college baseball here later on in the program. But let's talk some MLB baseball, because you and I talked about this before the year. And I said right here that I thought you should look at Shohei Ohtani for Cy Young before the season began, about 30, 35 to one in the marketplace. Obviously, that's been shortened as the year has gone on. And my whole point was, and you know, this is why I don't really like to bet these markets, is because it's narrative driven awards. Yes, you got to have the talent to do it. You got to have the numbers to back it up as well. But then you know that people are going to want to get on, to go down narrative street and say, man, let's do it. Let's give him the first ever MVP and Cy Young. And I think voters would like to vote for that. And why not? It would be exciting. Let's hear from Stormy and Matt Brown yesterday on Money Moves, because they were breaking this down as well, Jensen. Let's get their thoughts on the double award possibility for Shohei.
Shohei Ohtani, another very, I think, intriguing name in this whole conversation, because yes, he's minus 450 to win a fourth straight MVP right now, even with his numbers at the plate having dipped. That said, he's kind of made a goal of being a Cy Young pitcher, and several starts where he's focused exclusively on pitching this year was held out of the lineup. What is your feel for him in this market at this point?
So I don't want to do the whole conspiracy theory thing, but considering he is not doing at the plate this year what he has done in the previous couple of seasons, this would be a way to still give Shohei Ohtani an award while saying it's an amazing feat that you pitch as well as you do and then also hit as well as you do. However, you don't get the award every single year just because you do said thing.
Just because you're you.
Yes. So like, if you are not doing it up to the level that you have been doing it, but then you do one of the other things very, very well, then we can give you that award as well.
Well, that's something that we've talked about here, Jensen, a lot. And, I asked you before the season began, is it just a catch-all that you said, well, he does something that nobody else does, therefore it really doesn't matter what those numbers look like. Because he's the unicorn, he automatically gets that MVP. It does feel to be priced in to that. I think you and I look at that and say that's kind of unfair a little bit to the other guys in these awards markets. But I do feel like if the hitting is down, I do wonder if they'll then focus more on the pitching numbers and see if he's really eligible, if you will, just as a pitcher to win that Cy Young.
Okay, so if we want to take just a head-to-head comparison of your shortest odds with Christopher Sanchez right now, 2-1, right, Dave? We're seeing probably the shortest price there. Ohtani upwards of 6, 7, 8 to 1. Right now, wins above replacement just for this season. Shohei does lead Christopher Sanchez 3.9 to 3.6. If you're looking at innings pitched, obviously Sanchez is going to far and away dwarf that. 72 and a third to 49. We don't really do wins and losses anymore for our analytics group. Nope. They don't care that much about it. ERA and ERA plus for those uninitiated. These are pretty significant metrics in favor of Shohei Ohtani. A 0.73 ERA. Now, nothing to sniff at here at 1.62 for Christopher Sanchez. 86 strikeouts, though, for Sanchez to 54 of Ohtani. 29.1 K percentage for Sanchez. That bests Ohtani's 28.4. Walks are negligible here, 16 for Sanchez, 13 for Ohtani, albeit only 16 walks and 72 and a third for Sanchez versus 13 and 49 for Ohtani. What I think the narrative will be, and you and I have talked a lot about this in awards markets, should the Philadelphia Phillies find their way towards the top of the American League East, and we still got a long way to go here, it is a tough road to hoe. Ohtani is probably going to have to get to an innings threshold that would be comparable to where we ultimately believe Christopher Sanchez can be. And so, again, I think that is the first hurdle that Ohtani is going to have to cross. Is it within the realm? Like, you got to be within probably 10 to 15 innings in my mind, Dave. So that's a start or two of being into that realm if Christopher Sanchez continues his run here. The wild card is Jacob Mizorowski, okay? This is going to be a fascinating case study, and it's a lot about where you're looking at the dynamo and the strikeout percentage, and I'll just put it up with Ohtani here, and we can see where the tail of the tape is. When you look at Jacob Mizorowski's year, 64 innings to 49, he's at 100 strikeouts. 100 strikeouts in 64 innings, 54 in 49 for Shohei. The strikeout percentage, Dave, an eye-popping 40.3. Okay, that is insanity on so many levels. So before we even talk about what Ohtani's doing, I think the conversation must start with the top two shortest odds choices at Sanchez and Mizorowski. I know there's a concerted effort, and you were great to be the first to talk about, hey, I think there is some value, 30-35-1 on Ohtani for Cy Young. Is there a concerted effort? Sure. I don't know if he's going to have the innings, Dave, to be in the realm of where a Sanchez, a Mizorowski, a Paul Skenes, you know, Chris Sale, the way they're going, that's going to be the first threshold. If he can't get there, it's going to be a moot point.
Phillies are 9 games back, and that Sanchez conversation at the top of the odds board at 2-1 is always fascinating to me because, again, I go back to, say, the Hawk, Andre Dawson, back in 1987 when he won MVP in a last-place team for the Chicago Cubs, right? So, like, if the Phillies are middling, if they're, you know, a wild card team at best, but they're not challenging for a division, you know, like, again, it's not value because the most valuable player, this is Cy Young. It's supposed to be individual best pitcher. It's not supposed to be. That's where that value conversation comes in differently. But for Cy Young, I thought it would specifically be about the numbers and not necessarily team success. But, you know, this is why these narrative streets are down there. They even exist in Cy Young. So it's weird to see Skenes down there 4-1 too. That, you know, the opening day, which, again, really wasn't as much of his fault as we all thought. And then you saw, like, Livy Dunn, where she's being, you know, recorded at the first inning there against Toronto the other day. And you, like, you have these moments of negativity almost for Paul Skenes, and those seem to resonate more than any bad Christopher Sanchez, you know, at bat or outing and or Jacob Mizorowski. It's so odd that we kind of look at Skenes and go, yeah, he's having a down year. Jets, I don't know if that's really in fact, but that seems to be the perception now, and that's why he's drifted a little bit to 4-1 in the marketplace.
Interesting, right? As we go around the league, too, a couple of big things to hit on from yesterday. First and foremost, Greg Peterson on with us yesterday. It was an auto fade of the Cubs, and for good measure, mm-hmm. they've lost their 10th consecutive game now, Dave. Only the second team in Major League history to have two 10-game winning streaks and one 10-game losing streak in the same season. Only the 2017 Dodgers, according to the Elias Sports Bureau, have accomplished that feat. It's also the longest losing streak for the Northsiders since 2022. I know it's a sore spot for you talking about the Royals. This is mind-boggling what the Yankees did to them yesterday. 24 hits for the Yankees. Every starter had at least two hits. And again, that number, I believe that is where if you look at games played by Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, it's the first time in the Yankee history that at least two hits from every single player in their starting lineup have happened. Think about all of the guys, the Hall of Famers, the Titans of the sport. It's never happened until we saw it yesterday at Kauffman Stadium.
Well, I'll tell you this too. That's one of my comparisons, say, with Andre Dawson. Bobby Witt Jr. is the second betting choice for MVP, and this team is awful. He's plus 350. And by the way, he went yard yesterday when it was 9-0. So, like, that's the comparison if you want to start going down those paths of, like, okay, well, they did it back in the 80s with the Hawk. Could you do it with a guy like Bobby Witt Jr.? I don't think so. Aaron Judge is still odds on at minus $1.15. But the individual stats versus the team, it's just terrible. And the Mets, by the way, lose again. They fall 11 games under 500 here. But Juan Soto went yard, and they did the whole construction thing. So that was fun. The Rangers scored. Remember, they get no hit combined the day before. Then they bust out for 10 runs here against the Astros. 10-7 win there. And I know that the Athletics lost again, but how about Nick Kurtz? This streak, Jensen, it finally ends. 48-game streak he had been on base each and every game until yesterday. So pretty impressive there. And the Brewers beat the Cardinals again. 6-0. And then we had some interesting celebrations, Jensen, that are now starting to be highlighted a little bit around the bigs. Did you guys do any interesting winning celebrations there in Cleveland back in the day?
Not the Abner Uribe rendition yesterday. It is a family program, so not going to describe it You may want to go back and watch it on YouTube or on MLB TV. Pat Murphy, that's like your dad coming into your room and being like, I don't ever want to see that again. Like, I'll end you. that kind of postseason postgame reaction from Pat Murphy yesterday.
I would hope Carlos Mendoza might say, hey, guys, maybe we cut out the shenanigans when we're down 7-0 until we win, but we're 11 games under 500. So do what you want to do, I guess, boys. Just have fun out there as you lose almost every single day. We're going to talk some college baseball here. Kyle Peterson joining us in the next hour. And then Adam Burke's going to join us with Wes Reynolds as well for our Wednesdays with Wes. That's all coming up right here on VSiN by the Books.